What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Flex Appeal Dynasty Fantasy Football Show. It's been a long time. Thank you for hanging in there and waiting for us patiently. I am Ethan Paul, and Jacob Tyler will join me shortly. Before we do, I'll just break down, give you a rundown of sorts of what's going to happen in this show. We're going to talk about some big-name running backs. We're going to talk about rookie quarterbacks and tight ends. Try to sift through that madness. And then we're going to talk trade etiquette for people who are trying to trade this offseason. But before we get to all that, let's bring back in, fresh off of his honeymoon in, Jamaica, Jacob Tyler. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm back, man. I'm glad to be back. First of all, it was in Punta Cana. Second of all, you and Adam had an excellent show, man. I really enjoyed the listen. You guys held it down really well while I was out. Thank you, guys.
Oh, yeah. It was the least we could do while you were having fun in Mexico or wherever the hell. It's
Dominican,
all the same.
The Dominican.
Right. Tomato, tomato. How tan are you? Are you sunburnt? Are you golden brown? I mean, what's, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much sun did you get?
Well, I went from pasty white to about an eggshell white, so I got a little tan.
Yeah. And how's the wife?
Oh, she's wonderful, man. We're enjoying all the time together, and I'm eating a lot more healthier than I have been. So, yeah, healthiest week of my life, that's for sure.
Okay. Well, I give that about, 4 weeks, and then you're going to be like, man, I got a wife. Jeez. Well, congratulations on behalf of all Flex Appeal listeners and Adam, our other co-host. Jacob, let's start with the biggest news of the week. This one's kind of murky. We're still trying to figure out what the heck we're talking about here, but LeSean McCoy, I'm sure everyone's seen it by now on Instagram. This woman posts a picture of a bruised up face. I mean, she was pretty battered. Attorney saying he didn't do it. He wasn't there. She didn't. Now she doesn't know. I mean, what are we doing with Shady McCoy? If you own Shady McCoy, what are we making of this?
Well, first of all, if you haven't seen the pictures, a little heads up, not safe for work. You don't want to pull this up on your work computer because it's pretty graphic.
Yep.
Second of all, what are we doing with Shady McCoy? Well, I mean, you know the nature and the culture of the NFL today, especially with Roger Goodell. Just a little bit of a hint of a player stepping out of line and he's going to get whacked with a 2-game to 3-game suspension. So I wouldn't be shocked, even if McCoy has nothing to do with this, although the victim in question has come out and said that now she believes that he had nothing to do with, or she's not sure he had nothing to do with it, allegedly. So that might be the evidence that McCoy needs to clear his name. But, I mean, you're not a McCoy owner, but you're in a unique position. You're a Chris Ivory owner. So you have a unique position where you can kind of give us your thoughts on what you're doing with Ivory.
Well, here's what I'm doing with Ivory. I'm holding him. If the Shady McCoy owner comes a calling, I may try to sell him, but I'm going to sell him overpriced, obviously. If not, I may start Ivory in one of my two flexes if McCoy is out. Look, Jameis Winston allegedly molests an Uber driver. He gets 3 games. Zeke Elliott allegedly assaulted a woman. He got 6 games. So I'm assuming, as of right now, the way in today's NFL, I'm assuming Shady McCoy is going to get between 3 and 6 games suspended, right? I mean, that's how we have to just, even if the NFL starts investigating today, there's no guarantee they're wrapped it up. They've wrapped it up in 2 months by the time the season kicks off. I'm expecting Goodell to be, you know, suspension happy as usual and suspend the guy. So I might roll Ivory out there. I know the Bills stink, but hey, you know, if he's guaranteed touches, I might play Ivory depending on the season. You know, my running back situation is not particularly deep, so I may start Ivory. Other people may not. If you're deep at running back and you don't plan on starting Ivory, I say sell him. I'm calling that McCoy owner right now while he's panicking, and I'm saying, hey, dude, second-round pick for Chris Ivory, what do you think, you know?
No, I definitely don't disagree with any of that. I like what you brought up about McCoy and Goodell and how the investigation might not even start it right away, but he might have to lay the hammer down on him just to save face for the shield for the NFL. And the NFL is surprisingly slower than the NCAA at handing down punishments. So that's worrisome if you're a Shady McCoy owner. What am I doing if I have Shady McCoy? Well, his value is probably at an all-time low at this point. He's over 30, if I'm not mistaken.
He's 30.
So he's 30 years old. He's obviously on the downside of his career. He's on a pretty terrible team to begin with a rookie quarterback coming in who may or may not start. Hopefully he does. So McCoy owners, I'm probably looking to see what I can get, but he might be worth more to you on your team just with an off chance that he only gets maybe a 1 or 2 maybe even 0-game suspension. So I'm holding if I'm McCoy. I'm not listening to any offers unless it absolutely blows me away.
I agree. For the record, he turned 30 years old 3 days ago. So happy birthday, LeSean McCoy.
Yeah. not so happy birthday.
Not. So anyway, we'll have to see. Look, if you're a McCoy owner or any part of the Bills offense owner, I mean, you just have to wait and see. He may get cleared. You know, who knows? Stand by. Stay put. You know, hold tight. We still have 2 months to go.
I'm putting you on the clock here. Putting you on the clock. On the spot, actually. What are you offering straight up right now for Shady McCoy? If you desperately need a running back and you're going to take the gamble, what's the most you would offer right now in rookie picks or players?
A mid-second.
Okay.
I mean, that's, you know, 2.5 and later, something like that.
I'm probably offering that maybe in 2019, not this year's. Just for the risk that's involved with it. But I agree with the value, just not this year's second rounder.
Yeah, I mean, given the age and the workload he's had over his career and the fact that the Bills stink and their offensive line stinks and he's the only weapon there and now a potential suspension, you know, I'm probably not that interested. But come draft day, if there's nobody there that I like at 2.6, I may call the McCoy owner and take a shot at him. Why not?
Yeah.
You want to talk about another 30-year-old running back?
Let's go for it.
My man, DeMarco Murray, retires. He announced this week that he was retiring. He's going to take a job with the mothership, with the ESPN crews. I'm kind of shocked at this one. I thought for sure he'd sign a deal somewhere, even if it wasn't a timeshare role. Are you as shocked as I am that DeMarco Murray hangs him up?
Yeah, man. I mean, he wouldn't even work out for specific teams. I think New Orleans, for example, he wouldn't even entertain a workout offer that Sean Payton gave him. So, I mean, he clearly had an agenda. And I mean, not to say it's a bad agenda, but he clearly had an agenda. He wanted to be the lead back and he wanted to be paid. He's kind of boxing himself into a corner where there's not many opportunities for that to happen. So he kind of played himself out of some roles. I think he definitely could have gotten on an NFL squad, but due to his demands, that's probably why I believe he's going to work for ESPN this upcoming season.
Well, I'm holding out hope that he comes back. I mean, I don't need him to be an RB1, obviously. If you need DeMarco Murray to carry your team, you're not sitting pretty. But I have DeMarco Murray in our home league. I'm not giving him away just yet. I know you offered me a fifth-round pick. Thanks for that. but no, I'm holding him. Here's why. In my opinion, maybe he's trying to create leverage a la Jay Cutler last year when he signed with Fox or whoever he did. Mm-hmm. You know, one knee injury, one ankle injury to a big-time running back. You're telling me a contending team wouldn't give DeMarco Murray a call and say, hey, man, how much is he going to take to get you out of the booth?
Look, picture this, okay? An amazing team with an amazing offensive line. I say amazing team. Average team with an amazing offensive line, boneheaded star running back. He either fails a drug test or does something boneheaded. I'm talking about the Dallas Cowboys homecoming for Mr. DeMarco Murray. How awesome would that be, and how satisfying would a hold on DeMarco Murray be if that situation happened?
Yeah, I'd be thrilled. I'd be firing him up every week. I mean, look, I don't want to see Zeke go down. I don't want to see Bell get suspended or hold out. But if like Zeke or Bell or Gurley or, you know, Kamara, if one of these guys go down, you can't tell me that one of these teams wouldn't call DeMarco Murray and at least give him that call and say, hey, what, you know, come on in. So, look, if he gets signed by the freaking Dolphins, then, yeah, I'm not that excited. But yeah, I'm holding out hope. At this point, if you're holding him, you were going to hold him until he retired anyway. Why not just continue to hold him? That's my mentality on him.
Yeah, definitely don't disagree with you there. I'd probably do the same.
And you want some more shocking news about another aging running back that seems to have been in
the
league forever?
They're falling off, baby. They're falling off.
It's the end of an era, dude. The scat back prototype here. Darren Sproles announces that he's retiring after the 2018 season. Now, tell me if you've heard this before, Jacob. Last offseason, he announced that he was going to retire after the 2017 season. Mm-hmm. His season was cut short last year to an injury, so I guess that's why he's coming back in 2018. But it looks like if he plays a full season this year, he's finally going to hang him up. Any interest in Sproles this year for one last ride? If you have them, you're just riding it out. I mean, what are we doing with Sproles from a dynasty aspect?
I mean, I believe the reason he's coming back is because he had some statistics goals that he definitely couldn't meet last year, obviously, because he got hurt. So I think that's part of the reason why he definitely came back this season. Now, if I'm interested in Sproles, hell yeah, I'm interested. But you got to kind of, you know, waver a little bit because it's it's technically like a 4 to 5 headed monster in Philly right now. I mean, they have a lot of guys over there, man, and I don't know how that workload's going to go without Blunt over there. It definitely freed up a little bit of, you know, carries and usage, but Corey Clement kind of showcased his abilities and his skills in the Super Bowl. You definitely got Jay Ajayi over there. Donnell Pumphrey's over there. So, I mean, you got some guys. I think Sproles is probably going to step into the third down roll back right off the bat. So, yeah, I've definitely had some interest in Darren Sproles.
Yeah, I do think this is bad news for Corey Clement owners. If you wanted Sproles to retire today, you know, that way Clement can step into that third down role. So this is bad news for Corey Clement owners. Long term, I think, you know, 2019, Clement's going to be at least the third down back.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, at least, it kind of stunts Clement's growth, in my opinion, if Sproles is on the field on third downs and not Clement.
Yeah, similar to my guy Matt Collins, man. He kind of stunted his growth a little bit with the unfortunate signing of Mike Wallace. So, yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with your Corey Clement opinion.
I can't believe you're still on the Mac Collins.
Hey, never gonna die, Jesus. Baby. Carrying the train. Let's go.
You and all the Jeff Janis owners riding that to the grave, huh?
Yeah. I actually cut Jeff Janis at our rookie draft last year, so you can go to hell with that comment.
Yeah, congratulations. All right, so there's some running back news off the top of the show. Before we go on to our next segment, guys, I just want to say thank you to all the listeners of the podcast. We're cracking 700-plus listens now per episode. We're steadily increasing our listeners, so thank you. Please leave us a 5-star review in your iTunes app and give us a review if you like us. Also, join the conversation and get some advice from us personally by following us on Twitter, @FlexAppealShow. That's @FlexAppealShow, common spelling, no underscores. And also, one bit of news, it looks like we'll be joining the Spotify world soon. Right now, we're on Google Play and the Apple Podcast Store, but we'll soon to be joining Spotify. So if you get your podcast from Spotify or you know someone that does Spotify, let them know that the Best Dynasty Podcast is coming to them soon. All right, Jacob. Quarterbacks and tight ends this year seem to be clustered up at the top. Kind of hard to sift through them. Who do we like the most? Who don't you like? Where do we draft them? If you're in a regular, you know, 12, 14-man league, no super flex, no tight end premiums, is it safe to say that most of these quarterbacks and tight ends are going to be going in the second round and later?
I think that's fair. Maybe late first, depending on the structure of the team and their view on quarterbacks. But I think you're looking at a possibility of a early second round. That's when your quarterback runs are going to start. Sometimes, man, all it takes is one guy and the run just begins, similar to like the tight ends and wide receivers.
I agree. You want to start with rookie quarterbacks first?
Yeah, let's do that. I like you kind of let off with the fact that we're going to let everybody know our rankings and how we view the cluster F of the quarterback position, to put it lightly. Now I'm going to base my rankings on playing time and how soon they're going to get on the field. And it's a little bit of a tricky situation because some of the QB depth charts are not as, you know, clear as we'd like to think at this point. It's kind of hush hush to this point. So I'm going to give you my guy first. It's going to be Baker Mayfield because I believe that he will be on the field due to the fact that Tyrod Taylor's entering the picture and he's going to be in a new system just like Baker Mayfield. And I think Mayfield's going to be on the field not only by week 4 to 5, but he's also going to have the most talent around him than any of these 5 quarterbacks that we're going to be talking about.
Okay. I like Mayfield. Look, going into the draft season, Mayfield was my number one guy. I actually have him number 2 on my list. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about where I'd feel comfortable drafting him, in a 14-man PPR league, no super flex, in a 14-man league, I'm looking at the 2-3 to 2-6 range. So that's pick 17 to 20, right, overall. That's mm-hmm. where I have him. If I feel comfortable taking him in that range. Anything before that, I'm kind of, eh. You know, Tyrod Taylor, look, he doesn't throw interceptions. He's a mobile quarterback. He's going to have plenty of weapons. Believe it or not, I think the Browns might actually win some games in the first half of the season. They might actually slow play this. As many quarterbacks as the Browns have ruined, in my opinion, they may say, hey, if we can get this guy a full year to learn, let's try to do it. So I'm not so sure that he's going to be playing by week five or six. I'm not as aggressive on that timeline. So I have him as my second quarterback on the list.
What if they don't win early in the first half of the season and Hugh Jackson's saying to himself, okay, they've let me slide for a few years. There's no way they can let me slide after this year if we go 4-12 or something like that, right? So maybe he's in a force, be forced, his hand might be forced, and he might have to play Baker Mayfield to see if he can catch lightning in a bottle, maybe shake up the atmosphere and go on a little bit of a winning streak, retain his job, and then come back with a fully well-prepared veteran team next year with a solid offensive line, quarterback, obviously running back with Nick Chubb, the addition of Nick Chubb, and probably one of the best wide receiver groups in the NFL.
So if you're saying that, you're telling me that you think Baker Mayfield's going to be playing by week five or six, what is the record of the Browns at that point? Are you saying they're going to be like 1-3, 1-4 out of the gate? Like things have to go sideways, right?
I think they play the Saints week one, so logically you have to assume they're going to lose that game. I don't have their schedule out in front of me, a little unprepared on that fact, but I mean a 2-3 record going into week six, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Mayfield's lining up under center to start the game.
Okay, you're a little more aggressive than me on that, but I still like him as my number two quarterback on my big board. Do you want to know who my number one is?
Does he play in the state of New York?
Negative. Oh. My number one is Lamar Jackson. Oh, wow. And you want to know why? Because he plays for the offensive juggernaut known as the Baltimore Ravens. Doesn't that excite you? I mean, doesn't that just get you going?
All right, here's why I like him. Watching paint dry, sure.
Here's why I like him number one, okay? I do think he's going to be on the field this year no matter what, even if he's not lined up, you know, as the starting quarterback. I think you're going to see him in the Wildcat. I think you're going to see him running some weird formations. And then Flacco, let's face it, he hasn't been good. He's had some back injuries. Injuries might be an issue for Flacco. I think Lamar Jackson has a good chance to be starting this year and worst case scenario be on the field. And look, the Ravens, we joke about them all the time. They have a stable of running backs. They have a good defense. And they actually, you know, revamped, quote unquote, their wide receiver core with Crabtree and Snead and John Brown. Mm-hmm. I don't hate Jackson. And not to mention, he's super talented. And when a thing breaks, when the play breaks down for a rookie quarterback, what do? They run. And this dude can run. He's like Mike Vick 2.0. So in fantasy, you take a scrambling quarterback, you shove him in the limelight. I think he can, you know, his escapability will allow him to make plays and put up fantasy points. I think he's the most talented runner in this class by far, obviously, and he could produce sooner if only, you know, even if it's with just his legs.
I don't disagree with that. Now, let me back you up on the topic of him running the Wildcat and playing a little bit at wide receiver. That really doesn't do much for me. I mean, you're not looking at him being a primary wide receiver or even a running back or a jet sweep guy. At the most, if he's a Wildcat quarterback this year, he's not putting up more than, given he scores a touchdown, 6 to 7 points on a given week. Not every week, but a given week. So that really doesn't do it for me. Now, the Flacco deal, I mean, I think this is the last year of Flacco's major contract that he got after winning the Super Bowl, if I'm not mistaken. So obviously he's expendable at this point. But, I mean, Flacco's still a middle-tier quarterback in the NFL. Those guys just don't grow on trees. I don't think they're just gonna let him loose and, you know, go with Lamar Jackson right off the bat. I think they're gonna try and groom him, work on his short throwing game, because obviously that's the biggest question mark. He definitely has the deep ball, so I think Joe Flacco is gonna be the starter for the next 2 to 3 years at minimum, in my opinion, and that's why I'm lower on Lamar Jackson than most.
You have him fifth on your list.
Is that I have him last on this list of five, correct?
Wow. Okay. Well, look, I know he's not going to go out and put up big fantasy numbers as a Wildcat quarterback. All I'm saying is that if they incorporate him on the field early in the season, if Flacco were to go down or if the wheels are falling off the train by week 8 or 9, at least Lamar Jackson won't be thrown in there with no experience. At least he's been on the field. He got a taste of the speed, yada, yada, yada. That's why I like the fact that he could get in there early. As far as where you might take him in a draft, I have him as my top quarterback, so I have him at the top of the second round. In a 14-man league, I'm comfortable taking him anywhere at 15 or beyond. So, obviously, I'm higher on this guy than most. So, That's where I have him. Where would you take him in a, let's say, a 14-man, you know, rookie draft?
Well, I mean, it's such a crapshoot at the end of the second round. I mean, your hit rate's so low. I'd rather take it on an explosive player like Lamar Jackson. It's just, if I have needs and one of the positions and a player that I like is there, I'm going to take that guy over Lamar Jackson. But if not, I wouldn't hesitate to take Lamar Jackson mid to late second round. I really would not. And by saying that, I think these five guys, they're all ranked really close to each other. They're jumbled up together. But I just have Lamar Jackson a smidge lower than all the other four. Now, you talked about Joe Flacco. We didn't talk about possibly Lamar Jackson's biggest competition on the depth chart. You know who I'm talking about, right?
No, who's that?
You forget, my friend, Mr. Robert Griffin III out of Baylor. He is in Baltimore, man. Don't forget about RG3. You cannot.
We did forget about him. We didn't even know he was signed there. You just cheated.
I knew it. I heard this in the offseason. I knew it.
I heard it. Yeah, on a freaking tweet me typing that away. Nobody cared about.
You heard me
yeah.
typing away. Robert Griffin's Jeez, there.
Robert Griffin III. That's get out of here.
Hey,
with that
there
junk.
You go, man. Where are you taking Robert Griffin in a rookie draft? Tell me.
I'm not. I'm cutting him to make room for Lamar Jackson.
Well, if you have him on your team, you have big problems.
Yeah, if you have RG3 in your team, something went wrong a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the number two guy on your list? You have Mayfield 1. Who's the number two guy?
I'm going to go with the guy out of Troy. Well, Troy has in USC. Sam Darnold, New York Jets. That's my number two guy. I think that the playing time opportunity is going to be a little bit easier. I mean, You got McCown, you got Teddy Bridgewater. That does not scream major competition to me. McCown was flirting with retirement just prior to this offseason. So he's almost checked out. Teddy Bridgewater, you know the situation with him. He kind of got his leg broken in half. He's still coming back. I don't even know if he's fully healthy or cleared. So I like Sam Darnold. He's probably behind Baker Mayfield, obviously, according to my rankings. He's probably in line to see playing time the quickest behind Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, McCown, it seems like he's already kind of grooming himself into the coaching role to make room for Darnold. I do believe that he will get on the field pretty early. However, the Jets are always so bad, man. They're always such a mess. Robbie Anderson is such a head case, and then Anunua coming off of a neck injury. They're running backs they can't seem to get right. I don't like Darnold. Short term, I think a situation like the New York Jets could crush a young rookie quarterback and a young quarterback like Darnold.
I mean, disagree, yeah.
That's my only concern. I have Darnold at 4 on my personal list of 5 here. I like him. He has good talent. The talent around him and the Jets, I just don't love that situation. I'll slide him down my board. I actually have him as an early third-round pick in a 14-man rookie draft. So where do you have him going in a 14-man rookie draft?
Man, that's a good one. I mean, it's like I said prior, man. It's a big jumbled mess in that mid to early second round with all the quarterbacks. I think that's where the runs are going to begin with most leagues, depending on league format, obviously. Probably in the 2-4 to 2-6 range is where I'm going to be taking a Rosen. Okay. Darnold, I'm sorry, Sam Darnold.
Darnold, yeah. So just to keep the viewer, the listeners on the same page here, you have Mayfield 1 and Darnold 2, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And I have Jackson 1, Mayfield 2. So who are we settling on at number 3?
I'm going to go with Josh Rosen, the chosen Rosen.
Yep, me too. Jay Cutler 2.0 is my number 3 quarterback as well.
Too bad he's not. Too bad Jay Cutler's not there grooming him, man. That would just be the perfect situation, right?
Oh my God, I would pay to watch them in the same room all
but
day.
But he has Sam Bradford, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on if you already own Josh Rosen.
Yeah, Bradford over under 3 games played before he hurts his knee.
Man, I would have took the under if it was 2. Yeah, that's
all right.
That's
so we both have Rosen. We both have Rosen at 3. David Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald. They drafted Kirk. They got Ricky Seals-Jones. I mean, you can see it coming together. Defensive coach. They're probably try to protect him. I do see him on the field before halfway through the year. I mean, you can't project Bradford to stay healthy. I actually like his arm talent. I think he was probably the best pure passer in this group, but. You know, just the attitude's always bothered me. He just kind of doesn't seem to care at times. And I don't know. You know my feelings on Rosen. I won't dig deep into it. I have him as a late second round pick in a rookie draft. Where are you thinking? Probably, late second round?
2.8 to 2.9, 2.10 kind of range, you know?
Yeah. And we're using a 14-man
league
here. Okay.
So you're looking at, oh my God, you're looking at, what was that, 24, 25-ish? That's where I'm at.
It seems like we're all kind of the same. I would take Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield pretty high in the second round if I was a QB needy team. And then I have Rosen, Darnold, Allen late second, early third, and late third. So, you know, I have them a little more spaced out than you. It sounds like you have them starting at like the 2-4 range, and they're all jumbled up all the way to the high third, right?
Okay. That's accurate.
So at four, you already said at four, I have Darnold at four. I'm guessing you have Allen at four?
Yeah, I have Josh Allen. There you go.
Okay. I don't know, man. Allen, big cannon arm, but Buffalo, that scares me just like the Jets. I mean, what are we looking? I mean, in my opinion, Darnold and Allen are probably the two most likely to fail only because of the teams they're on. Is that too harsh?
That's pretty damn accurate right there. I mean, when's the last time Buffalo produced a really capable quarterback outside of a few monster games and a nice stretch by Tyrod Taylor? I mean,
yeah, and Fitzpatrick, you know.
Oh man, Fitzmagic, yeah. To God, man, yeah. It's been a good while. That's for sure.
You know, you have to go all the way back to Jim Kelly. You know,
yeah.
It's like it's gross.
Yeah.
So Josh Allen is fourth on your list, and then you have Lamar Jackson five. So let's just recap for the listeners. You have Mayfield one, Darnold two, Rosen three, Allen four, and Jackson five.
That's what I got. Yeah.
All right, and then you would take them all starting at the 2-4 all the way to the high third. So you have them going on runs on your personal board.
And yeah, that's where I'm at. And personally, I'm not taking any of these guys in any of my rookie drafts. So any guys in my league that are trying to use this information against me, it will not help because I am not taking any of them. Second of all, these guys, it's really interchangeable. I mean, so many things can change. Somebody can get hurt tomorrow, and it'll immediately shoot them up my board. So, I mean, it's really not much of a difference between these five guys. It's really a jumbled mess.
All right, let me ask you this. You have Lamar Jackson at five. Let's say training camp opens up next week or 2 weeks, whenever they start, and you start getting reports of Joe Flacco's back giving him problems. How do you move Lamar Jackson up your board at all if we start hearing some whispers about, you know, Flacco's back injuries or any kind of anything like that? How far do you move him up your board?
Hell yeah, man. He's in the late first territory at that point. Hell yeah.
Okay. So if we get wind that he could be starting more games sooner than we think, you're willing to move him up. You don't hate the prospect, you just hate the timeline.
I hate the situation, I hate the timeline, I hate that Joe Flacco's in front of him. I hate the offense that they run over there. God, I hate a lot of things about Baltimore.
Yeah, I hate everything about Baltimore. So.
Except their logo, man. The crest, man. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, the Raven. You give them that. The colors are cool. We like purple. We can dig it. All right. And then for the listeners, my list is Jackson 1, Mayfield 2, Rosen 3, Darnold 4, and Allen 5. And Darnold and Allen, as much as I like them as throwers of the football, I don't like the Jets and the Bills. So there's our top five on our personal boards. Oh, and I have... Josh Allen is a late third round pick. That's how much I dislike the Bills. So, yeah, I'm not touching him with a 10-foot pole. Now, and just for all the listeners, I'm sure you understand this. If you're in a super flex league where you're starting two quarterbacks, and quarterbacks are obviously at a
premium,
a premium, right? You could probably bump our rankings up. I don't know, six or seven picks.
I was going to say 7 to 8. Yeah, that's accurate.
Yeah, yeah. You could take, you know, if I have Lamar Jackson as a high second round and you have him number one on your board, you're probably taking him at 1.8, you know, 1.9. So,
hey, I've seen some guys taking Baker Mayfield at 102 right after Barkley goes. I've seen some drafts with Baker Mayfield going.
That's nuts. Look, I'm a huge Mayfield fan, but even if I was in a super flex league, that's a little too rich for my blood. I mean, I could see maybe fifth overall, but geez, two, no, thank you.
That's a guy that could put up 25 points a game, man. I don't see a Geis or Penny or Michelle putting up 25 points a game. That's the factor, man. That's the premium factor.
But it's easier to find quarterbacks in today's game. That's a whole different discussion. You want to try to tackle these tight ends? There's really only one guy I like, and then the rest I'm not touching. But you want to try to tackle the tight ends?
Let's do it. Let me preface this by saying, it was a beautiful tight end class before the NFL draft, okay? And we've already dogged on this team enough on this show, but the freaking Baltimore Ravens ruined a tight end class.
Yep.
They single-handedly ruined a tight end class. A little bit of help from the Eagles, but God, guys, way to go. You did it again.
Just another reason to hate the Baltimore Ravens. So
that's it.
All right, I think everyone's number one tight end on their board is Gesicki, the kid out of
Penn
State.
By a large margin. Yeah,
lands in Miami. I have him as my number one, obviously. I'm a little more bullish on him than most. I know you and Adam aren't on the same page as me. I would be willing to take Gesicki at the back end of the first. Now, hear me out. The 13th or 14th overall pick in a 14-man league. Here's why. The Gase factor. Gase is the guy that turned Julius Thomas into a fantasy stud for a couple of seasons in Denver. He wants to use a tight end in his offense. He tried to sign Julius Thomas there in Miami. Didn't work out. Gesicki is the best freaking tight end in the class by far. Athletically, he's a freak. He blew the combine up. Nobody in front of him. Plenty of targets vacated by Jarvis Landry, the coach. It all sets up perfect for a rookie, Hunter Henry-esque rookie year type for Gesicki. So I'm high on Gesicki. If I'm a win-now team, which you should be if you're picking in the 13-14 range of a 14-man league, especially if you need a tight end, I'm 100% okay taking Gesicki at the end of the first round. I know you aren't as aggressive on him, though, right?
No, it's not the fact that it's Mike Gesicki. It's the fact that it's the tight end position and a rookie tight end. Although we have had some Evan Ingrams and some Hunter Henrys in the past few years, kind of come out of their rookie years, I don't think it's that common and that common enough for me to spend a late first round pick on him, unless I have an absolute need at tight end and a guy I like doesn't fall to me. Now, hear me out on this, okay? Ryan Tannehill, injury history. You said you're completely fine with having Mike Gesicki as your tight end and using a late first. Would you be comfortable having Brock Osweiler throwing to him in a 2018 season? Because that's who the backup is right now.
Wait a second. I didn't know that. That changes everything. That changes everything.
Does it really? And another fact that you brought up, Julius Thomas. Wasn't Julius Thomas in Miami with Adam Gase for a little while?
Yeah, he was, but he was also old and run down and looked like a 45-year-old tight end. I don't blame Gase for not being able to make him productive. I blame Julius Thomas being old and slow. So
I blame Gase for not being able to scheme him open. That's what I'm not a big fan of Gase, man. I'm really not.
Also, you know who also?
You know who also is not a fan of Gase?
No.
The Miami Dolphins players. They're not a fan of Gase.
Look, Gase had a guy named Matt Moore, a left-handed quarterback, and Smokin' Jay Cutler playing for him the last 2 years, okay? With Tannehill, if you look at the numbers way back when, with Tannehill, Adam Gase is actually a pretty productive play caller with Tannehill as the quarterback. So if you're going to push your chips into a rookie tight end, if you absolutely need one, and especially if you're in a tight end premium league, Gesicki's the only guy I would reach on or push for that high in a draft. That's all I'm saying.
I don't disagree with you there, buddy. If that's the case, I do not disagree with the thing you just said. I just like for the listeners out there to factor in the Osweiler factor, the fake Julius Thomas narrative factor, and the fact that, you know, Gase is a terrible coach and he's not going to be there, and we don't know what offensive system is going to be in 2019. That's my hesitation, coupled with the fact that the tight end position is so hard to predict.
Yeah, but what do we always say? We want volume and we bank on talent. I mean, Jarvis Landry's gone. They got a bunch of Jags in Miami. Volume may be there for Gesicki out the gate, and we bank on talent. He is the most talented guy in this class. You know, are you not buying any of that? You don't like that?
I'm buying it, but you got a guy, Danny Amendola, that's going to suck up those Jarvis Landry targets, in my opinion. Kenny Stills, big fan of him. And is this the year that Devontae Parker does it, ladies and gentlemen? Probably not.
All right, let's move on. The rest of these guys are bundled up.
They really are. We're probably going to separate them on talent, not situation at this point, right?
Yeah. I'm going talent here. I'm going Goddard at number two, not Godert like we were saying, our Kunas, you know, French accent. Goddard at number two for you?
Yeah, definitely Goddard. I like the fact that he's in a position where Trey Burton was, I don't want to say groomed, but Trey Burton had a pretty damn solid season in terms of a backup tight end. You know, in the in-season rankings, he was pretty damn terrible. But he had a few good games, and I think Goddard can be a solid guy for him.
Yeah, I think he could end up turning into a nice handcuff for Ertz, and then long-term, once Ertz is gone or if Ertz ever leaves, yada, yada, I take Goddard over any of the other guys. It kind of sucks. The Eagles reached up to grab him just to keep him from the Cowboys.
Yeah.
So they kind of screwed the tight end. Allegedly. That kind of screwed the tight end class up, too, so I'm not a fan of Goddard, so I would take him. I would take him like late second. I mean, where would you take Goddard?
Oh, man, if I didn't have the biased mindset of not drafting tight ends, let me kind of channel my negativity on the position out a little bit, and then probably agree with you late second round. Probably in the mid to late. Probably so we're looking at a 14-team league, so 28. Probably in the 22-24 range. That's where I'm 22-24. Yeah, overall.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, maybe. I'm probably not interested in any of these guys. If I'm that tight end needy, I might be trading for a proven veteran, you know, over reaching for any of these guys anyway. But just for the sake of it, you know, we'll go through it. Hurst and Andrews, the two Baltimore Ravens tight ends. Any interest in these two guys? And are you giving anyone the edge? I know we haven't seen, you know, training camps yet or preseason, but who do you like more?
Hurst, because he's older than me. At 28 years old, no, I don't know. What is Hurst, 25, 26 at this point?
I think he's 25. Okay.
But by the end of this year, the narrative is going to be that Hurst is about to retire. The way people talk of his age, it's pretty hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty hilarious. No, I like Hurst a little bit more, strictly on the fact that he looks game ready at this point. Mark Andrews looked pretty damn good for Oklahoma last year. But I think Hayden Hurst is the guy to own in Baltimore at this point, but... Who the hell knows? I don't even think Baltimore knows at this point, man. So it's really throwing shit at a wall, you know? Oh, there you go. Yeah. Drop the S-bomb.
Yeah, good job. Curse on your first episode back from your honeymoon.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess I'll go Hurst over Andrews only because of the age. He might be more ready to play right away. I do like Andrews as a sneaky long-term stash, you know, because of his pass-catching ability. But he might be more of a groom, you know, like a groom project for the Ravens. Number five, this one's kind of interesting. You have Samuels, the Steelers drafted him. Is it Jalen Samuels?
Yeah, so I got Jalen Samuels for the Steelers. Let me just double check that because I'm looking at the depth chart and he's not even on there.
Well, so he was like a running back tight end hybrid. They might have him as a running back.
Tight end five, Pittsburgh. Yeah, I mean, regardless of the fact of where he's at on the depth chart, you got Jesse James, you got Vance McDonald, who joined the team last year, Xavier Grimble. I recall, I don't know where the hell he went to college, but I recognize the name and being in the draft. And Ryan Malik. So, not touching not touching Jalen Samuels.
No, I mean, the only way, I mean, look, Jesse James is meh, and then McDonald's meh. Maybe in a deep, deep league, tight end premium, I'm maybe reaching for this guy in the fourth round, you know, and stashing him on a deep bench. In hopes that the Steelers use them. I mean, they like using tight ends. They just haven't seen – they can't seem to get one to be a field stretcher down the middle. I mean, maybe. I mean, maybe. But it'd have to be extreme circumstances. Now, this next guy, however, I do kind of like more. Schultz, the tight end out of Stanford that was drafted by Dallas. I actually don't mind this kid. I'd take him in the early fourth round, really, only because there's a bunch of dudes on that Dallas team that, you know, you never heard of. And then Uncle Rico, it's looking like he may be cut, you know. I mean, maybe you take a stab at Schultz.
No, I don't disagree with that. I mean, I'm trying to look on Fantasy Pros where they have him as an ADP, but the problem in Dallas is you got Jeff Swaim and you got your guy, your boy, Rico Gathers is well ahead of him at this point in the stage. I don't think Rico Gathers is a thing. I'm a lot of people disagree with me on that fact, so especially you. So he has a big hill to climb. So I don't know, man. I like him more than some of the other guys that we just talked about for sure. That's for a fact.
Yeah, look, the only reason I like Schultz is because he was more of a run blocking tight end in Stanford. Maybe he gets on the field sooner than later with the Cowboys, who like to run the ball. And you know, Rico's about to get cut. So
is he really?
Well, it's rumored, the rumor that he might not make the damn 53-man roster. So,
Jesus.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, maybe Schultz climbs up the board. I don't know. But these are all real late grabs. I'm not happy about any of them, really. Mm-hmm. After Gesicki, I'm not touching any one of these guys personally. So, there you go. Anybody else you want to mention at tight end? Any other thoughts on a tight end? We all know your position. You don't like drafting rookie tight ends, but...
I like trading for them. I don't like drafting them. You are correct.
Yeah, you'd rather wait 2 or 3 years, see how they do, see if they have any potential, and then try to move on them, right?
That's my move. Now, I know we have a segment coming up, but this is something I didn't talk to you about. I have a little question. I heard it on SiriusXM Fantasy Radio, and it's a pretty intriguing question. I actually didn't get it all right. There are six wide receivers. We're going to stay on the position detail here. There's six wide receivers that have finished as a wide receiver one. That's top 14 in the past 3 seasons. Only six.
Mm-hmm.
Can you name them all?
Jesus, wide receivers?
Wide receivers. There's a couple that should be easy for you, but there's going to be two that's going to be, whoa, I didn't think of him.
And they finished in the top 14 the last three seasons.
Only the last, yeah, top 15, actually, the last three seasons, top 15. The
last three seasons in a row. Okay, let's see. Antonio Brown.
That's easy, yeah.
Okay. OBJ had an injury, so no. Let's do Hopkins.
No, man. Remember the season 2 years ago?
Oh, okay.
With Brock Osweiler? No.
All right,
no.
So we'll do Julio Jones. He's got to be there.
He's not there.
No, Jesus. Okay, just name me the six. This could take forever. Just name the six.
You're no fun. Okay, I'm going to go with Antonio Brown, okay? Uh-huh. I'm going to go with the obvious here, Jarvis Landry. That shouldn't have been an easy one for you, okay?
Okay.
Mr. Consistency, Doug Baldwin's right there with Brown every year. Not in rankings, but he's always a wide receiver one.
Okay.
Brandon Cooks, man. He's played with maybe two of the top five greatest quarterbacks of all time the past three seasons, so he's up there. So to bring it down, break it down, Brown, Baldwin, Cooks, and Jarvis Landry. Number five, Larry Fitz. Everybody's sleeping on my guy.
Of course.
Here's the other one. I'll give you one more chance to guess player six, just for the fun of it. Guess it. It's not Julio.
T.Y. Hilton.
Negative. You don't remember last year, goofball? Come on. Demaryius Thomas is the number six guy.
See, I would have thought Julio or A.J. Green would have been in there.
I thought so, too. Those are my two guys. Those are my five and six on the fact. I completely forgot about Demaryius Thomas. So,
all right, let me ask you this. How'd you get to this random-ass top six list off of our quarterbacks and tight end rundown we had going on?
Because while I was driving in back from my honeymoon, I was listening to the show, the fantasy Sirius XM radio show, and this question popped up, and I was like, I'm gonna ask Ethan this question. I'm gonna test his knowledge because I sucked at this.
I tell you what, you're doing it right. Only a week into your marriage, and you're already ignoring the wife on a road trip listening to fantasy
she
sports.
She was sleeping. So. Come
yeah,
on.
Of course she was. All right, before we move on to our next segment, Jacob, which is going to be talking some trade tips, some trade etiquette, if you will, I just wanted to give a shout-out to the listeners again for making us one of the fastest-growing Dynasty Fantasy Football podcasts, unofficially, of course. Over 700 listens per episode now. We thank you for jumping on board the hype train. Don't forget to join us on Twitter, at Flex Appeal Show. Give us a follow. Chime in with questions and input. Tell us how much you love us, how sexy our voices are. Whatever you want, it's Twitter, and it's a free country. All right, Jacob. Trade etiquette. I wrote down three simple rules that I try to follow when I do trading. This was kind of your brainchild. Why don't you tell the listeners what we're trying to accomplish in this last 20-minute segment of our podcast?
Well, the point of this segment is to kind of make a less toxic dynasty community, especially for your league. You may be going into trade talks the wrong way. You may be going to them in the right way and not answering them the correct way. So that's kind of where we're at with this. We kind of want to talk to you about, I don't know if Ethan's going to, you know, reveal his strategy in trade talks because he does have his ways. He is a salesman, for example. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with this. And kind of I can honestly talk about some of the faults that I had in the past, and I can see them now and say, wow, I was a major prick, and I definitely should have went about that a different way. So that's where you're at.
Before we start, we have both probably done everything that we're going to tell you not to do, and of course you learn from your mistakes. For the record, we're both pretty nice guys. We have not a mean bone in our body. So it's not like we're trying to be assholes when we're trading. It just sometimes the way you say things or the way you approach another party member about their team can sound like an asshole. You know what I mean? So we're just trying to give you a couple of tips and advice so that way there's two happy parties on each side of the trade when you do a trade in Dynasty. So obviously we're not experts. We're just trying to give some advice and wisdom to the new listeners and to the listeners. So, all right, why don't you lead us off? Give me an example of how not to start a trade conversation based on previous experience or not.
Well, it's a perfect example, and I can use a simple analogy. In elementary school, you saw the signs on your walls and everything in the hallways. The golden rule is treat others like you want to be treated, okay? Uh-huh. That is the golden rule. In Dynasty, treat another manager's team like it's their child. Do not dog them if you want to make a trade happen. Just do not, because it's gonna go south real quick. This for me is an example. I was trying to make a trade for a tight end, and the other guy, I mean, I wouldn't say he's in a complete rebuild mode. He made the playoffs. I think he made the finals just 2 years ago. And I looked to make a move. And my opening line was, hey, I want your guy. It doesn't look like he's going to be valuable to you by the time you're ready to compete. Yeah, I did say that, unfortunately. And, I mean, looking back at it, I'm like, man, I was a major, major prick right there. And no wonder the trade fell through or didn't even start, because I started it off with the fireworks and I completely dog this team, and I completely admit fault on that one. If he's listening to this, I can understand your frustration, my friend.
Yeah, you never want to start a potential trade talks with, hey, your team is in rebuild mode, or hey, your team's not very good. Why don't you give me your best player? That, you know,
now,
that's kind of a rough way to start a relationship.
Now, let me kind of phrase it how I should have said it. I should have went into the conversation saying, hey, how's it going? Just looking at your team. What's the direction of your team right now? Are you looking to compete this year? Are you kind of setting up some pieces for a future run? If so, you mind if we talk about a tight end on your team that I'm really interested, that, you know, maybe you don't really need this year or something like that? That'd have been like a little more passive aggressive than the approach that I made originally and actually made.
Yep. And I'm glad you said that, because that kind of bleeds right into my number one rule, okay? The first thing I keep in mind when I'm approaching any owner about a trade, always try to help the other owner. Even if you don't care about that other owner or his team, you want to at least make it appear like you care about his team needs. In other words, don't say, hey, man, I love Jarvis Landry. What do you want for him? That's you know, he might not even respond to that, okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What you need to do is say, hey, man, you know, I'd love to give you some more running back depth. I have a couple extras. You know, are you interested in starting some conversations? And then you get into Jarvis Landry and all that stuff down the line. But if you go in there thinking, let me try to convince this guy that I'm here to help him make his team better, then I think that's, you know, they at least feel a little safer talking to you. So that's just like my number one rule. Always try to keep the other guy's team needs in mind. It just makes it easier out of the gate. So that's my number one, okay? Do you want to hear my number two?
I do. Let me hear it.
All right. This is kind of back to your original point here. Number two, I have it written down. Never shit on another man's roster. So it kind of plays right hand in hand with what you said. Treat the other guy's roster like a love child. Don't go in there and say, hey, dude, your roster stinks. You know, we've covered that. Okay. And my number three, this is just like a rule for me. I'll always take quality players over quantity. So don't be afraid to take two or three assets and package them to get a quality player in return. I'll always take the best player in a trade, even if I'm giving up more than one piece. So that's kind of my top three. When you're trying to get one good player and you're willing to give up multiple assets, Jacob, how do you approach it? What do you say? Like, hey, dude, I got a shitload of picks. You know, you want to make some magic? How do you throw it out there?
Well, first of all, I'm glad we're openly saying shit now. I don't have to apologize for it. Thank you,
Well,
Ethan.
Now we're winging it, man. We're going way off script. So
yeah, so the way I approach something like that, let's say I have boatload of tight ends, boatload of running backs, which that's rare. Let's use the example, boatload of wide receivers, for example.
Okay.
If I have a lot of depth at wide receiver, I'm going to go to a guy and say, look, I have two guys right now that can be definite starters for you, either at wide receiver two or your two flex spots or something like that. And you got a running back sitting on your roster that you might not even play most weeks at this point. Just send them over. You know, it's mostly for these lower depth guys like a Moncrief or a Marquise Lee or a Robbie Anderson or something. Some guys that are really solid but aren't valued extremely high, but that could be valuable assets for another team and not yours. And you could say that. Look, I love these guys. I love these guys. Talk them up. You know, I love these guys so much, but they don't have a place on my roster right now. They don't have a place on my starting roster. So I need to get rid of them, and I need something else. That's a way to talk up your guys and get rid of them at the same time. Because obviously, if you're going to go to a guy, hey, I'm looking to freaking trade Jarvis Landry. Well, why are you looking to trade Jarvis Landry? You obviously don't want him, so I'm going to lowball you for him, you know? You got to talk him up a little bit. So that's kind of where I'm at with that.
I agree. And another thing I like to think about when I'm approaching trade, I'm not always blindly, I know a lot of people say go for the talent. I'm not going to just, if a guy throws out, let's just keep using Jarvis Landry. If somebody throws out, hey, Jarvis Landry's on the trading block, I'm not going to go aggressively pursue it just because he's a talented wide receiver. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I'm always thinking about team need, team fit, And what would I be able to do with the rest of my pieces if I were to acquire Jarvis Landry? In other words, right. I'm not going to go throw some picks at him and say, I want him, and he's going to be my sixth wide receiver. If I'm already loaded wide receiver, I better have another plan in place. I better get something else cooking, you know, to start making some other moves after I get Jarvis Landry. So I always try to keep team need in mind, not just chase the talent. So that's another, you know, thing I like to use when I'm thinking about making a trade.
Ethan, great advice, my friend. I would be listening to this show after it drops, and I would be writing down every word you say. Thank you.
Now, look, I didn't want to give away all of our tips, but you know, I'm trying to just give some friendly advice to everyone, including the people in our home league. You know, just to make things smoother when we're trying to do transactions. That's all.
I'm right there with you, my friend. Now, obviously, this podcast is for you. Okay, you the listeners, not who you're trading with. We're not trying to help those guys. We're trying to help you because they're not listening to us, obviously.
Right.
But on the other hand, I do have to say this. It is okay to lose a trade. You wanna build that dynamic, that camaraderie, you know? You don't want to be the guy that trade rapes every single guy in the league, and they're just afraid to trade with you just so they don't get burned again. You might even offer them like a DeAndre Hopkins for, let's say for example, like a Jarvis Landry and Demaryius Thomas. Obviously, they win the trade. But they're snake bitten, man. You've owned them the last five or six trades. They don't even want to take that chance again. So don't burn the trade. If you get a trade and they come to you with an offer that's completely outrageous, that's so off the charts in value, maybe throw something at them. Just say, hey, look, man, I don't need this guy on my roster because you're sending me a couple guys. Take this guy as a throw in. Just kind of sweeten the pot a little bit. He'll remember it. And if not, remind him. Hey, remember, I threw in Demaryius Thomas as a guy to help you out or something like that, you know? That helps. That helps build a trading relationship, a trading partner in the future, because you're not going to win in this league, in dynasty leagues, if you can't trade. And if you got no trading partners, good luck. You better hit on every single draft pick because you're not winning anything.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's more important. You don't have to give away stuff. You don't give away anything, but you want to try to at least make it appear that you're helping, like, kind of goes back to my number one rule, that you're helping the other owner out. Look, you just don't want to burn any bridges. You don't want to make it harder than it needs to be to try to acquire talent. So if you could make friends, of course, you're probably playing with a group of friends anyway, but if you could make the trading relationship friendly, then you're going to have more success long-term trading with that guy. And likewise, the other guys in your league that are constantly freaking, you know, trade raping each other or throwing out bad offers or whatever, the good owners in your league aren't going to want to deal with those people, so it's going to be easier for you to get stuff done with those other owners. You know, so it's all about relationships, rapport, being, I know this sounds feminine, but being sensitive to everyone's needs and mindsets.
You got to say it in an accent, sensitive to their needs.
So, look, we're both married now. We understand. It's a give and take relationship, anyway, anything else you want to add about trade etiquette? I mean, obvious, you know, tips for a listener? Let's say you're brand new to Dynasty, you know, something like that.
Well, just to piggyback off the okay to lose a trade deal, I mean, it's especially okay to lose a trade if it makes your team better. Like, if you trade away three guys for two guys and you lose the trade, but the two guys you're getting are going to be starting for you and they're obvious upgrades, it's okay. You can lose a trade voluntarily. It's totally fine.
Look, let's use our trade as an example. A couple weeks ago, I traded DeAndre Hopkins away to you for the 1-1, which is basically Barkley. And of course, there were some other pieces in that deal as well. But I know full well I'm giving up the known asset, okay? And that in the next 2 to 5 years, it's obvious that you are going to win that trade if Barkley doesn't pan out, okay? So I could technically lose that deal. The odds of me losing that deal are higher than you losing the deal. But what does that do for you and I next time we go to trade? You're going to remember in the back of your mind, man, you know, Ethan gave up Hopkins in a deal once. Like, that's nuts. This guy,
I could throw him a bone.
Yeah, right. Let me just help him out right here because I feel really bad. You know, whatever. I mean, I know it's cutthroat, but at least you know, hey, look, Ethan gave it a shot with me. We made it work with some very valuable pieces. Yeah, I'll play ball talking about this backup tight end and this, you know, this player. It just makes it easier down the line when you've already done trades with big fish before. So
now, the likelihood of that happening is slim, but it's way higher than if you would have freaking owned me in a trade and you're looking to get a deal. And I'm going to, hell no, man, you owned me on the last trade. There's no way I'm throwing you a deal now.
Yeah,
That's just not going to happen. So this is kind of, you know, kind of goes into that. And there's one more thing that I do, and other guys do it to me, and that's probably the reason I do it, is don't go into a trade and saying, hey, I'm interested in so-and-so. What do you want for him? No, you're making the conversation, dude. You got to make the offer. You can't make the guy that's you. You can't
you
do that.
You do that. I did that to me the other day. You said, hey, I want a tight end. And then you left it at that. I said, okay, make an offer.
I did say I was going to offer a second rounder. I did say a mid-second, kind of into the conversation. Because we weren't really talking about which tight end it was. So obviously the pick mattered, you know, and which player.
So what you're saying is do as we say, not as we actually do, because Jacob is guilty of doing that.
I'm a major hypocrite on this. I'm trying to get better at it.
We're working on it. I agree. When you're going in there for a player, don't say, hey, what do you want for Jarvis? Because odds are that owner is not going to say, oh, you know, I don't know, a third round. Well, you might win that. They might have voluntarily lowered the price, you know, lower than what you were expecting to pay for him. They're not going to do that. So it's better if you want a player, just go in there and say, hey, dude, I got a couple second round picks. I'm interested in player A. You know, do you think we can make something happen? At least you're not technically offering a pick, but you're letting them know kind of where you're thinking, you know, what the ballpark is.
Yep. You're making it available. You're making it easy on him. You're not making him, oh, God, now I have to do all the damn work. No, I wouldn't even be surprised. I wouldn't be upset with a guy if he ignored my request or message if I were to leave an offer like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, it's bad trade etiquette. Back to the title of the segment, you know?
Yep. Bad trade etiquette. If you said, hey, what do you want for Jarvis Landry? If what I'm thinking is, I'm not going to tell you shit because I don't want to lower the price tag on him without you coming at me first. What if you're willing to offer a first round pick and I come out and say, oh, I don't know, I'll take a late second round pick. Well, all of a sudden I've lost all my leverage and I've lowered the price tag on him voluntarily. So I guess that's a good thing for the listeners who are getting approached about players. Never say what you're willing to take for a player. Let the guy approaching you for that player make the original offer.
He obviously wants a guy on your team, so you have the leverage to start off. And I know we're approaching an hour here, and we'd like to keep it around that time, but there's one more thing I'd like to say.
One more. Go ahead.
How to throw in the trade calculators and all this into the discussion. Because obviously, I personally use the trade calculators not to determine a trade, but just to get a starting point. You know, I'll go to a guy and say, hey, look, I want this guy. I can give you this guy. Look, these experts, they all think the trade's really close. Not saying it has to be this trade, but I just want to use this as a starting point. We can do some moves. We can take some players out, put some players in. But this is kind of the basis of the deal I want to make. And it appears to be fair. And I'm going to throw it back at the other guy and tell him, what do you think? And I used it as somebody else in my corner, not as the end-all be-all. I'm not gonna accept a trade just because it's dead even. And I'm not going to be mad at a guy if he declines a trade because it's dead even. At the end of the day, value is what somebody else is willing to pay for it. And if they don't want to do it, that's my fault. That's my problem.
Right. Yeah, that comes up a lot in our home league, you know, these dynasty charts and these dynasty value websites and stuff. I'm kind of like you, and everyone should use them as a guide, as a, you know, see how close you are, you know, in relative value from these expert sites or whatever. Because at the end of the day, these expert sites are just guys like me and you that just have been maybe doing it longer or, you know, had some cash flow to start a website. So, I mean, you know, use them as a gauge. Don't use them as the Bible. We're kind of guilty of that. We've thrown that out a lot there as, you know, when we're negotiating. It's just another tool to help you negotiate, but it's not the end-all be-all. So, I agree.
Don't be a slave to the calculators.
Calculator slaves. All right, Jacob. That's it, dude. Let's see. We talked running backs retiring, running backs allegedly beating their girlfriends up, rookie quarterbacks, rookie tight ends, trade etiquette, trade rules, trade tips. Anything else you want to cover, dude, before we let the listeners go back to their merry lives?
No, man. I mean, do you have any idea what we're going to talk about next show?
I do not. We're going to have to brainstorm. You know what? That's a good idea, Jacob. If people are still listening 59 minutes into this podcast, hit us up on Twitter at Flex Appeal Show. Give us your ideas. What do you want us to talk about next week? We'll go total open mic segment if you chime in on Twitter. Yeah. I'm talking one guy on Twitter gives us an idea. We'll roll with it, baby. You know why? Because we can. So, Jacob, I think it's time to say goodnight because I'm starting to feel the juice, if you know what I mean.
That's it, man. Good night. Good night, listeners. It's great. Great talking to you.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a one-sided conversation or one-way conversation. I wish I can hear back from you, but
right.
Maybe you could give us some good ratings and some good reviews. That's a one way to come back at us.
Look at you pitching the show, pimping the show out. Thank you. Sometimes I feel like a weird guy tooting the show's horn all the time. So. All right, guys. That's it. It's gonna do it for us. We are out of here. We're about to drop the mic. I am Ethan Paul for Jacob Tyler. The newlywed. We're going to see you guys next week, or I guess here. You're going to hear us next week. How about that? Because I forget your listeners, not viewers. Thank you for listening to Flex Appeal Dynasty Fantasy Football.